5, WAC overhaul, technical changes, briefing, and public hearing. Joanna Idy and Mike Sensi.
Do we want to dim the lights a little bit? Thank you. Perfect. Thank you.
Good.
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, for the record, I'm Mike Sensi, Deputy Chief. While Joanna Idy will walk you through specifically each of the changes to ensure, you know, that they're part of the record, I thought that it'd be helpful just to summarize some of the major changes. Technical in nature, on the surface they may not appear to be, so we just want to make sure that there's proper understanding here. These changes are part of the WAC overhaul project. A lot of technical changes and updates, clarification of statutes and reference statutory references. It involves oyster reserve sale rules and fish receiving ticket rules primarily. So on the oyster reserve piece, the object was to improve clarity of the subject matter in rule titles, updates language and streamlines provisions, make some structural improvements, updates the statutory references, and adds a penalty provision where appropriate to ensure enforceability and clarity. And just for the new commissioners, to ensure you understand how the administrative code works with statute, the rule may provide for the prohibition, but it has to be supported by a statute in Title 77 that provides the penalty for a variety of offenses. And so by adding statutory references, penalty clauses, both the public and the officer understand what the punishment ranges are and, frankly, whether the rule is supported at all. When we combined Title 77, the old Wildlife Code, and Title 75, the Fisheries Code, it changed the way rules were enabled. And so our rules have to dovetail into a specific statute in order to be valid. So it's an important tie to make. Yes, sir.
Being a dry lander from the east side, our Rocky Mountain oysters are sourced completely different. What is an oyster reserve?
These are areas that the state manages. I don't know if it's proper to say owns. Manages the public resource. Director, you probably have more insight on an oyster reserve than I do in the history.
Just so, I mean, is it a chunk of ground or what? Or I have no idea what you're talking about.
It is property.
It is property. And I'm looking at Bob Sizemore, actually. There was a series of tidelands that were set aside as called oyster reserves in Puget Sound. I believe they're all in South Puget Sound. And in those oyster reserves, my memory is that they were primarily set aside to try to reestablish Olympia oysters, if I'm remembering that right. But they're, Bob, can you help me with that before I get myself any deeper in all that?
I can help, too.
Oh, good.
But
I'm Bob Sizemore. I'm with the fish program, and I'm a research scientist, and I've been with the involved with the shellfish industry for 22 plus years with the department. So again, my recollection is that it is oyster lands that are set aside, and I believe there's also some lands in Willapa Bay, and these are set aside for increasing production of oysters, so collecting seed and then selling those to oyster growers.
Right. Yeah, and enough revenues are generated from the Willapa Oyster Reserves to fund some research into various issues that might affect oyster aquaculture. So failing septic systems was one of the types of research projects funded with the Oyster Reserve Fund. So it generates a certain amount of money each year.
Okay, moving on, Madam Chair. I should be able to do a better job with the rest of these. My apologies. The director usually saves my bacon, and he did a great job. And then the other piece relates to catch accounting, fish receiving tickets primarily. And the changes to the fish receiving ticket rules are not at the policy level, but we clarify provisions on when an original receiver must prepare a fish receiving ticket. And many of these rules are pretty dated. Some have been revised, but Joanne Idy has done a good job of doing that on a comprehensive level. And so even some of those rules that we may have visited in the last 5 or 10 years have needed some further refinement to ensure that the public understands what the legal obligation is and that officers also understand what it is we're trying to enforce. So as an example, the way a catch accounting is structured is the original receiver, the first person to accept the catch from a harvester is responsible for accounting for that catch. Well, what happens when you have two original receivers that come together? One's a harvester and a wholesale fish dealer, and then he's delivering to another wholesale fish dealer or someone that's acting in that capacity. Who at the end of the day is responsible for accounting for the catch? The law says that if it hasn't already been done, then it's the second guy that gets it. But it's not super clear. So those are the kinds of things that we worked on trying to improve. So we also add some provisions describing a new treaty Indian shellfish receiving ticket. There's no new reporting requirements here. For treaty fish, we were operating on a Volta-era form that had two or three species on it. So here's what it looked like. And everybody in this room knows that the treaty right extends to many more species than the few that are shown here. And so a fair amount of work was done with the co-managers to develop a form so that the dealer didn't have to scratch out Chinook salmon and write in crab. And then we had to try to decipher the handwriting when it made it to our data management people. Tribal resource managers, had some of the same frustrations that our resource managers had with respect to shellfish. A finfish receiving ticket doesn't have the level of detail that I think a shellfish manager would hope to have. Certainly catch area relative finfish is going to be different than catch area relative shellfish. If you're harvesting finfish, there's no DOH certification tag ensuring that that product came from a safe and sanitary beach and that there was ownership related to where it was removed. But this form has a data field so that certification number is present. So we think that there's a greater level of detail that benefits our harvest managers. It's been fully vetted, and we just simply describe the form in the rule, just like our other forms are described. We also added some detail to the definition of fish buyer. We didn't change any responsibilities here, just made it clear what a fish buyer is. Fish buyers are also defined in statute, and so we tried to marry things up there. Fish buyers are defined in a couple of places in WAC, so just trying to make sure that we eliminate some confusion. And then it occurred to me that while we describe fish receiving ticket forms in rule, and we lay out the requirements related to how you complete them and the data fields that are mandatory, we never really defined the term. Not really. We didn't define the term. So that could compromise our catch accounting, our catch fraud cases. We felt that it was necessary to define what a fish receiving ticket is, maybe just as important as describing what it looks like in terms of the type of information that's on the form itself. We went through the lien process with respect to our fish receiving ticket system. There were a number of great recommendations that came out of that process. Technology's come a long ways. There are other modes to get catch information of the department other than putting a stamp on an envelope and shoving a fish receiving ticket form in that envelope. And so we want to make sure we move slowly here, but the idea is to allow a PDF of a fish receiving ticket to satisfy quick reporting requirements for salmon and sturgeon fisheries, but also that PDF file would satisfy the obligation to send in the hard copy of the fish receiving ticket itself. So we save wholesale fish dealers and buyers a stamp or multiple stamps. I don't know what the rate is today. It's like 80 cents at a minimum, something like that. But it's, it can add up. So this is an efficiency move for those wholesale fish dealers and buyers. And it's likely to be expanded down the road as we build the capacity to deal with catch information coming in this way. And so there's some general technical changes that you can see here. So Mrs. Ide will walk us through. Miss Ide. Mrs. Ide.
It's Ms.
Ms.
My mom.
Being your third marriage, inside joke earlier from Commissioner Smith. Inappropriate. She'll walk us through in detail.
All right. On that note. Okay, so I'm just going to walk you through some of the changes that we made, just because I know that this package is rather large. It looks kind of complex because we moved some things around without actually changing the underlying meaning of it, but just to try and improve the organization within several of these sections. So I'm going to start at the top, and the top is at page 7 of your materials in the fifth batch rules agenda item. So we're starting with the oyster reserve sales, and really the big time. Thank you, Bill. big time ideas you want to keep in your mind is, you know, these are just technical changes and they're intended merely to update these rules. The subsections are added where it's appropriate to ensure rule clarity. Language is streamlined. RCW references, which is incredibly important, are updated, especially because the RCW references within this chapter, and this is an entire chapter that we're updating, were to Title 75, not Title 77. So that's really important. We also inserted rule violation penalty provisions, just so that it's very clear, you know, if you violate this rule, then this statute applies. And that really helps out enforcement officers. It helps out the public to understand, you know, what the consequences of violating might be, and also helps the courts and prosecutors. So first, I want to just start quickly with WAC 220-60-010. And as you can see, we also tried to add some more detail to the rule titles to signify exactly what is contained within the rule. This will also be helpful after we do the reorganization and renumbering. But just to give you an example, this is a rule where we inserted some subsections. That's for ease of reference. Really, you know, this is just to update language. But I did notice that there are a couple OTS typos in here that I'll be fixing. And so it says oyster reserves sales in the last sentence in subsection 2. So I'll be removing the plural on reserves there. In WAC 220-60-040, same sort of principles apply. We're really trying to make sure that we're signaling what the body of the rule is addressing. We added some subsections here and just kind of rearranged this. This particular rule is also an example of where we did insert some penalty language as well. 220-60-050, this is for invoices and payment. Yeah. And this, again, a cleanup of language, inserting some subsections, trying to make sure it's clear, and just making it very, very clear when you need to, you know, send in payment after you receive an invoice. On the next page, page 8, we have 220-60-060. This, again, is another one where there's a little typo here that was not caught, and I will be changing the "and" in the beginning of the sentence in this section to "an." It should be that word instead, and also capitalized. Again, this is technical changes without changing the underlying meaning, just trying to take some of the antiquated language out of here and the legalese, kind of clean it up a little bit. 220-60-070 is another example of the subsections and another example of cleanup, as well as adding in a penalty provision. So, and I just want to remind you, when I say we added in a penalty provision, this isn't making it so the penalty provision didn't necessarily apply before. It's just making sure that we're saying, yes, in fact, this is the penalty that is associated with this rule. It would have applied anyway. This just makes it very clear that this is the one, signifies it, not, it signals to the reader that this is the penalty that you might face should you violate this rule, rather than, you know, adding a new penalty. That's not doing that. This would have applied anyway. 220-60-080, again, just some quick technical cleanup. 220-60-090 is broodstock sales prices. Again, just a quick cleanup there as well. So, I mean, this really, the changes here are not quite as complex as we're going to run into with the fish receiving ticket changes. And so now on the next page, on page 10, we get into the fish receiving ticket rule changes. So if you want to follow along with me here, in that rule, 220-69-210, fish receiving ticket definitions, we added additional description to the rule title to ensure rule clarity and to prepare for the renumbering and reorganization. Additional detail is added to the definition of fish buyer to ensure clarity in the definition and use of the term. It's also moved to a different subsection to ensure alphabetical order. We try to do our definitions in alphabetical order whenever possible, so hopefully that will help people find things more easily. And, okay, and then we just renumbered subsections based on that as well. So on page 12, we have WAC 220-69-240, duties of commercial purchasers and receivers. This one, we did some pretty big organization. We basically took one chunk of the rule and moved it up higher in the rule, if that makes sense. The provisions were also consolidated regarding the responsibility to fill out a fish receiving ticket to reduce redundancy. Essentially, before, what we had was if you're importing fish and it hasn't been, you know, it hasn't been documented yet, or whether or not we combine that into one specific subsection, just rather than having two separate subsections, which seemed confusing. We clarified provisions on when an original receiver must complete a fish receiving ticket. RCW references are corrected for accuracy and to ensure enforceability, because we had some out-of-date RCW references. The law had changed in previous legislative sessions, and unfortunately that hadn't been incorporated into rule yet, so we ensured that that was happening, because actually we were having cases being thrown out because judges were saying, well, this isn't the penalty provision that applies to this, so I can't do anything with it, case dismissed. So we wanted to make sure that wasn't going to happen. Let's see. Yeah, there's a lot of crossed out here. And so I want to move on to the next page, page 14. Sorry, I'm skipping over 13 because all of that chunk of strike through is all the underlined language that we moved over to page 12. On page 14 and the pages following after then, I won't get too far in the weeds, but what I will tell you is I worked with regional harvest managers on updates to contact information and how reporting must be done for harvest to reflect actual practice and improve flexibility for reporting for harvesters. We had a lot of out-of-date contact information here, out-of-date phone numbers, out-of-date email addresses, so we ensured that all of that contact information is accurate and as it should be. We also made some changes to the email addresses and said, you know, you can either email or text to that email address to satisfy quick reporting requirements, just to actually reflect current practice, because you can send an email via text now and it's still an email. So we're just trying to make sure that we're allowing for enough flexibility while without changing the actual requirements. This is just different avenues for reporting. Deputy Chief Sensi mentioned this earlier, and I will tell you, it starts on the very bottom of page 15 at subsection 14, dealing with salmon and sturgeon, and it follows over onto the next page. It's subsection 14E. It relates to quick reporting requirements for salmon and sturgeon. It's amended to include that provision that allows a person to submit a fish receiving ticket in PDF format to satisfy the quick reporting requirements for salmon and sturgeon. If a person chooses to report this way, we're not going to make them mail in a copy, just as he said. What we're going to do is instead have those regional harvest managers forward that on to our Olympia offices for our commercial harvest data team, and it'll already be in electronic form. It'll pretty much be set up to where it will automatically forward to them from an email address. So that way, we're saving the harvesters some time, streamlining the process a bit. It just makes things easier for everyone. But the underlying requirement that the person must keep a copy of that in their records for 3 years does not change. They still have to keep a copy. So we're, you know, going to be able to go back and identify that at a later date. We did work with the commercial harvest data team to ensure that reporting this way will work for them. And also, they're interested in potentially looking to do some more electronic types of reporting in the future, and this will be a really good way to test that out. Okay, so moving on, we'll go to page 19. We have 220-69-230, description of Washington State non-treaty fish receiving tickets. Technical changes for clarity to ensure proper description of the non-treaty fish receiving tickets was done here. There was updates to language, and we inserted subsections to ensure the provisions are clear and may be cited more easily by prosecutors and the courts. And we also made some changes to language to ensure uniformity throughout the rules describing the different kinds of fish receiving tickets we have. There was some issues with the way that the subsections were numbered before. Another rule references those. We're also fixing that, and I'll get to that in this package. There were incorrect subsection references. So 220-69-234 is on page 21. And that's the description of treaty Indian fish receiving tickets. and we're amending the title to say, and Treaty Indian Shellfish receiving tickets. And this is just to make those changes to include the provisions for describing the Treaty Indian Shellfish receiving ticket that's already been developed by the department, because we have to have that in rule. All right, I'll move on to 220-69-250, which is on page 22, next page. This is required information on non-treaty fish receiving tickets. These are purely technical changes as well. And I also made some changes to subsection 6, which is our penalty language. Before, it said it's only a gross misdemeanor, but we also wanted to say or a classy felony, depending upon the circumstances of a violation, because those are both included inside that particular RCW 7715630. Moving on to 220-69-254 on page 23, we have required information on Treaty Indian Fish and Shellfish receiving tickets. This is just making some changes to ensure that the shellfish Treaty Indian Shellfish receiving ticket is incorporated into rule properly. And then we also have a correction of an RCW penalty reference at the bottom. 220-69-241 on page 24 is duties of commercial fishers. And we made some changes here. These are technical changes for clarity, including adjustments to subsections throughout the section and correction of RCW references where appropriate to ensure accuracy and enforceability. Page 26 is our next rule. We have 220-69-260. This is distribution of copies of non-treaty fish receiving tickets. So technical changes were made here for clarity and to improve the rule structure. It also includes the provisions to remove the requirement to mail in the hard copy if you choose to quick report for salmon and sturgeon using a copy of your fish receiving ticket via PDF. So this is just marrying this up with the previous provisions allowing a person to quick report in that way and saying you don't have to mail it in. This also includes just some additional description to the penalty provision at the end. Bottom of page 26, 220-69-264, this is distribution of copies of Treaty Indian Fish receiving tickets. Technical changes for rule clarity here as well, and correction of RCW reference for violation of rule provisions. This ensures enforceability. This is another example of the law changing and the rule changing to suit. Page 27, 220-69-264-01 is distribution of copies of shellfish receiving tickets. These are also technical changes and correction of RCW references for violations of rule provisions to ensure enforceability. Lastly, well, on this page, there's two more. On page 28, 220-69-280, fish receiving ticket accountability, we added some subsections here as well, clarified some language, and we changed the RCW reference to correct it as well. And then the last one we have is on page 30, 220-69-243, duties of aquatic farmers. And this is also, again, you know, just adding some subsections and cleaning up some language without changing the underlying meaning, just to kind of update it as well. So if there are any questions at this time, I'm sure Deputy Chief Sensi or I can handle those for you.
Director Anderson.
I don't know that I would ask this if we weren't a little bit of ahead. So, okay. So I'm on page 11, which is the second page of 220-69-210, subsection 16, and this is under the definitions. It says treaty and treaty Indian. So I have two questions. Okay, so here we've got, it's for purposes, blah, 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 means persons or who are members of federally recognized Indian tribes that are entitled to harvest fish or shellfish, blah, blah, blah. And then it references under this set of treaties.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So presumably that section would apply to any individual that was a member of a tribe that was party to one of those treaties, right? Okay. All right, so then after that, it goes on to say, or persons who are members of federally recognized treaty tribes. So that would make me think that there are some treaties that are federally recognized treaty tribes who are not party to one of the treaties listed above, whose reservations are located within Washington State. So that probably takes care of Umatilla, Nez Perce, and Warm Springs, and who harvest fish or shellfish within their tribe's reservation. Okay. So first that, I'm trying to think of, well, what other tribes, other than those that are party to one or more of those treaties, are there? What tribe would that be? And then secondly, this does not apply to Spokane, Kalispell, Colville, Chehalis, any of those tribes that, I mean, some of those which harvest fish. And so I just want to be clear that this doesn't apply to those tribes because they're not treaty tribes. So two questions: are there treaty tribes other than that are not party to one of those treaties that are listed in the first part of that sentence? And secondly, just to be clear, this doesn't apply to a tribe, let's say like the Chehalis tribe, who harvests fish on reservation. They're not a treaty tribe, therefore they're not encompassed in this definition.
Can we let Mike answer that? And then Commissioner Smith has another question.
It kind of dovetails.
Okay, well, let's hear.
And this may be a stupid question, but shellfish only saltwater?
Brackish or salt, yes. Marine water based, yeah.
Biologically, though, that's not. I mean, I'm just. They're freshwater clams.
And which we don't allow commercial harvest on at all.
On reservations? Okay.
Well, we can't. We don't have any jurisdiction on reservations, so whether they do it or not.
But you can't get freshwater clams certified in the state of Washington, but now I'm thinking about crayfish.
That's what I was thinking about, Lake Washington. Okay, but
Director Anderson, this is existing language that
we didn't want to touch.
Maybe it's just fair to say, look, could we just check on that between now and the time that it comes back?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Just want to be, and I don't want to speak out of turn here. I know it's not intended to apply to like Chehalis tribe. I wish it was, but we don't. The link here is U.S. v. Washington, where it gives us the authority to have a WAC that, as we talked about before in the previous agenda item. So, just if we could just take a look at that, make sure that there's a reason for the or. Probably is, but
in AG, I recall a discussion with, I believe, Fronda Woods at the time about this piece, similar concerns that you have, that it's, we need to pull some old emails out, and I appreciate you bringing this up because I think this is going to read differently when we come back.
Okay. And we we do have, as you correctly noted, we have a state tribal management plan under Rafiti for crawfish, and they are harvested, I believe, commercially in Lake Washington by the Muckleshoot tribe. And there may be some others, too, that I don't remember.
Thank They might want to harvest burrowing shrimp, too. No, just joke. Any other questions for staff? Very good job. You're making it easy. It's a Herculean task to go through all these rules and clean them up, but well worth doing. It's going to make your life easier in years to come.
Well, that's the goal, I hope.
Okay. Do we have we have no one who's signed up for public input, so we can close the public hearing on this item on the agenda. So we're done. Thank you. Mm-hmm.